Welcome to Profit Boss Radio. I'm your host, Hillary Hendershot, certified financial planner and owner of every money mistake you can imagine. I now run a successful financial planning and wealth coaching firm. I'm here to share with you what I learned turning failure into financial freedom. Profit Boss Radio is all about how women like us are authoring our own lives, rewriting the rule book of money, and running incredible businesses. If you like this show, hit subscribe, share it with a friend, and leave us that five-star review. Are you ready, Profit Boss? Let's do this. Did you know that approximately 40% of all business owners in the U.S. consider themselves to be financially illiterate? It's not that they don't know how to grow a business. Many of them do. It's that they don't know how profitable their business actually is. They don't know the numbers, the real data behind cash flow, sales revenue, profit margins, interest rates, expenses, all the numbers that make a business actually profitable. And if that's you, I want you to know you're not alone. I've worked with business owners just like you for the past 20 years, helping them know the exact numbers to take control of their business's profitability and heal their relationship with money. I call that becoming a profit boss, and I'm ready to share that same step-by-step approach with you. It's all part of my new training called Becoming a Profit Boss, a step-by-step plan to owning your business numbers for higher profitability without sacrificing your purpose, joy, or integrity. I'm going to share what our team of profit coaches and financial advisors have learned working with hundreds of business owners. We'll cover your top questions and your biggest profit challenges. This is no canned webinar. I'll be 100% live with you, and it's available only for an exclusive period of time. The webinar takes place on September 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That's September 8th, 2021 at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. This training will unlock that next level of success for you. And the best part, besides the fact that we'll be live together, is it's totally free. To register, just go to hillaryhendershot.com/webinar. That's hillaryhendershot.com/webinar. Grab your seat today and I'll show you how to become a profit boss. See you in the training. Well, hello, Profit Boss. Welcome to this amazing episode of Profit Boss Radio. I have with me a unique sort of guest. She has a life experience that I think will be significant and meaningful for many of us. This is probably a show you're going to want to forward to some friends. Krista Saint-Germain is a master certified life coach. She is a grief expert. She's a widow. She's mom and host of the Widowed Mom podcast. When her husband was killed by a drunk driver in 2016, her life was completely and unexpectedly flipped upside down. After therapy helped her unfurl from the fetal position, she discovered life coaching, post-traumatic growth, and learned the tools she needed to move forward and create a future she could get excited about. Pretty amazing. So now she coaches and teaches other widows so they can love life again too. Okay, Krista, correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably never planned to be a grief expert.
No, 100% no. I'm coming up on 5 years since Hugo died, and no. Definitely was not the plan.
Were you working before he died?
I was working. In fact, we worked together. And so I was managing a team of project engineers, and he was an engineer. And so we worked at the same company. He'd been there for 20 years. I'd been there for 10. And yeah, I never really envisioned myself doing any sort of grief work.
And did you leave that job because of what happened?
No, not really. Actually, it was wonderful to work where people knew him. Yeah. So I went right back to work about 6 weeks after he passed. I was back and I stayed there. And as I was working, though, I was also experiencing life coaching for myself. You know, I was kind of back at that place where everyone was telling me how strong I was. And from the outside, I looked like things were fine, but I wasn't feeling fine. I was feeling empty and robotic and hollow and trying to figure out, you know, surely this can't be it. And so I happened to find life coaching. And I ended up loving it so much that I decided to leave that job to pursue it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And so let's just start with, I think, something that's top of mind for, because everyone knows someone who's lost someone. What is the empathetic, sympathetic way to address a widow? I'm sorry for your loss just feels so useless.
I don't know that we're ever going to get it exactly right. And I think part of the problem is that we keep trying to do it perfectly. And so then we end up either avoiding it or not doing it at all. you know, I think it's easier just to empathize and be honest and speak from your heart than anything. And remember that your job is not to make them feel better.
What is your job?
Just to be there and witness how they are feeling.
Okay.
Right. To love them as they feel it.
Is there anything you just wish people wouldn't have said?
Don't worry. You're young. You'll find someone else.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. All kinds of things that people say because they think emotions are problems. And so they're trying to fix your feelings and they're trying to make you feel better.
Yeah. You know, I have a client who lost her son to suicide and he's my age. So definitely a tough thing. And one of the things she confided in me is that she wants to talk about him and she really feels like other people don't.
Yes. Yes. Other people are, we're usually, again, we're so worried that we're thinking, well, you know, maybe they're not remembering it. And if I bring it up, that will make it worse. But what's actually happening typically in the griever's mind is it's very, you know, front of mind for us. We're never not thinking about it. And so it's actually refreshing when someone else acknowledges what is our 24/7 reality. That's why I loved working with people who knew Hugo because they missed him too. And they wanted to talk about him. And that was very helpful for me.
So it's okay to just bring it up.
Yes.
I miss him. This is awful.
Yeah.
Just the incomplete communications that people say inside grief.
Yeah.
As long as they're authentic and honest.
Yeah. And just don't try to fix it.
Yeah. Not trying to have you not feel.
Right.
Okay. Do you have children?
I do, two.
Okay. And how old were they when he died?
They were 12 and 9, and they were not his biological children. So he was my second marriage.
Okay.
So I had a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and he had a 17-year-old from his first marriage.
Okay. And were you the one to tell them about his death?
I was the one to tell my children about his death. His son was with us in the hospital. I got him there pretty quickly because he was a little bit older.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was probably the hardest conversation I've ever had in my whole life. Yeah, I was to tell my children.
Are you able to use your coaching wisdom to support your kids grieving? How's that? Any words of guidance for listeners about telling children about something life-altering like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I could just give everybody the magic, you know, pill of how to do it and make it not hurt, but that's just not the world we live in. Yeah, I think you just need to be honest. And again, you know, emotions aren't problems and we don't need to fix them. And the same thing applies to our children. So, you know, whatever they're feeling, it's valid, it's legitimate, and it's not a problem. And we just want to be with them as they experience, you know, whatever they're meant to experience.
Yeah.
That was different for all of my children.
I bet. Tell us a little about your timeline. How long did it take? I'm sure you were just processing for many months, but when was your lowest emotional point? And at what point could you begin to see the light, a light?
Mm-hmm. That's such a good question. So I had a therapist in my back pocket from my first marriage when I had gotten a divorce. She had helped me years before.
Yeah.
And so I immediately went back to her and I found that to just be very useful in terms of talking about it and really articulating out loud what had happened so that I could get myself to the place where I could actually accept that it wasn't just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I just needed to tell it, right? And talk about it. And so I did that for quite a few weeks. I did a lot of journaling. And then, you know, at a certain point, feeling well enough to go back to work, went back to work. I don't think that there was ever one particular super low moment. I think the body has an amazing way of blocking all of the intense emotion in the beginning. Not to say that it wasn't intense because it absolutely was, but it almost felt like it was dripped out a little bit. So you're kind of, it's intense, but you have this numbness and disbelief, mm-hmm. which allows you to just not completely disintegrate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so then gradually it just kind of, for me, started to sink in that he's really not on a business trip. It really is true. This really has happened. And so it was just layers of ick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
In your experience, you've had the opportunity now to meet lots of other people who've been and are grieving and through grieving. What is a reasonable timeline, do you think, to begin to feel better? How long does it take?
I really don't like to assign timelines. And the reason is because I find that people use them against themselves. And they do it in a couple of ways. One is that they tell themselves that they should be farther along than they are.
Okay.
Right? They will hear, ooh, I'm supposed to feel better by now. So there must be something wrong with me. And then they don't actually allow themselves to feel how they feel, which is a necessary part of healing. And also sometimes if they think it is based on a certain timeline, then what they end up doing is really white knuckling their way just to let the time pass, or they end up distracting themselves by keeping busy or using other avoidance behaviors to not feel the feelings because they're so caught up in the idea that if I can just make it to this particular piece of time, that it will be better. And that's really not at all how it works. So we just want to relax and let ourselves feel how it is that we're feeling and not worry so much about the timeline. Even, you know, we're coming up on 5 years. Even this summer, I've had, I call them grief grenades, I've had quite a few unexpected grief grenades. It'd be really easy to judge myself for, but I think that's just the way of grief. It's different for every person, and timelines really don't help.
Good to know. Good on that. I want to talk about finances a little bit, and then I want to talk about post-traumatic growth. So what financial plans did you have when he died that you were grateful for?
Not much.
Okay.
Let's be honest. So, I mean, I ended up being grateful for the life insurance policy that existed and for, you know, him just being a fiscally responsible person, but it really wasn't something that we had talked about at all. It really wasn't something that we had planned for. And so I just got lucky. And a lot of people don't find themselves in the position that I found myself in, but I was really unaware of, I didn't know his passwords. I didn't know where things were. I didn't know, you know, there's just so much I didn't know. And one of the saving graces was that we worked together. And so the people at his company, which was also my company, you know, walked me through everything that had to do with the life insurance policy from work and his benefits from work. But no, we did not have the necessary conversations and I was not financially prepared.
Okay. So what are you now coaching people to do? What do you wish you had done?
Yes. Well, have the difficult conversations for one, right? It's nice to think that nothing will ever happen, but I wouldn't stake my claim on that. And so have the conversation, understand, you know, what you've got in place. Don't procrastinate it. I see a lot of that. It's very painful for women who, especially, you know, they encourage their spouse to take steps that were never taken or thought that things were handled that weren't handled, really had been so completely disengaged that, you know, it's not just a matter of jumping in and taking over. It's really a matter of having no concept of what exists and where it is and how to find it and who to call. And so I just think the more prepared you can be, the better. So passwords, for one. Do you have a LastPass? How do you have that organized? And could your partner find it if they needed it? Would they know who to call, right, at your company? It's those little details.
Right.
If we can be prepared, yeah, way better.
What did people, and maybe you've already answered this, but what did people do for you that supported you and made life a little bit easier in the aftermath?
Yeah, so many things. I had one of my friends. So we happened to be coming back from a trip that I'd been doing this. It's a camp for kids who are blind or visually impaired called Heather's Camp. And it's named after a friend of mine who died when she was 25. And anyway, we had come back from this camp and I'm very invested in this. And so many of my friends are part of this program. And so that my Heather's Camp family rallied hard around me. They were all immediately at the hospital. You know, one of them kind of designated herself in charge of my public relations. And, you know, she fielded all communication and basically took over. One of them bought all the school supplies for my children because it was August and school was about to start. I didn't ask. They just did it. Some of them mowed my lawn. I didn't ask. They just did it. They brought me food. You know, I mean, you name it. They just rallied. Not everybody's in that position, but I was very, very blessed. One of my son's teachers, without me knowing it, went to the principal and arranged for him to get a different teacher because we were about to start the school semester. And she didn't think that the teacher he was assigned would have a soft touch and she knew he would need that. And so she went to the principal and switched teachers to make sure that my son was well taken care of. Yeah. I mean, I had a, and still do have a great village.
Yeah. Moms come through, huh?
Right.
So the term post-traumatic growth is obviously distinct from the thing we most often hear, post-traumatic stress
disorder.
So Tell me, what should we know about that?
Yeah, I think everyone is familiar with post-traumatic stress disorder, and post-traumatic growth is something that was coined, a phrase coined in the 90s by a couple of researchers, Tedeschi and Calhoun. And what they kind of inadvertently discovered was that this old idea that following a trauma, the best thing we could hope for was just to get back to normal, mm-hmm. right? That we could actually not just bounce back to where we were prior, but that we could actually take a trauma and bounce forward with it. We could actually use that trauma to improve our life satisfaction, to deepen our spiritual connection, to get more aligned with our values and our purpose, right? To improve the quality of our relationships. And so it just really redefined what's possible after trauma. It's not just about recovering.
This may be a really simplistic question, so forgive me if I'm trying to break this down further than it can be broken down, but how do you accomplish that? What's the key to that? I mean, I myself in my life have experienced pain as a portal, but not that kind of pain.
Yeah. It's not something we do overnight. I think part of it has to do with just the decision that we make, right? First of all, we have to even know that it's possible.
Yeah.
So many widows that I work with, they're really just trying to resign themselves to the new normal that they think is the best that's possible for them, right? They didn't ask for this new normal. And the thought in the back of their mind is, well, I guess I'll try to get used to it, right? And what that really means is I'm no longer going to love my life.
Right. If I'm lucky, I'll get okay with it.
If I'm lucky, yeah, I'll get okay with it. I'll get back to that place where I'm surviving, but I'm definitely not loving my life. So first, we have to just even consider that it's possible. Most of us don't even know that it's possible to go on, right? And use that as a way to love life even more. And so we have to know it's possible. And then we just have to start examining all the things, right? And being open to the idea that just because we've lived life a certain way, just because we've thought about things in a certain way, doesn't mean that if those patterns aren't serving the life that we want to create in the future, that we have to keep doing it that way. And so we have to be kind of malleable.
Hillary here with a quick timeout to tell you how we can work together to improve and even make your financial life 100% organized and hassle-free. As a listener, you probably know my story. I made every money mistake in the book until I finally figured out the power of learning how to change my brain, including my beliefs about money. This allowed me to multiply my wealth to over 8 figures. And since then, I've created a done-for-you comprehensive course to teach other business owners exactly how I did it. I've also been a wealth and financial advisor to women and couples for more than 20 years now. If you think we may be a great fit to work together, go to hillaryhendershot.com and just start a conversation. We provide fee-only fiduciary advice to our clients, which means our clients never, ever pay commissions, and we do only what's in your best interest, just like it's supposed to be for all financial advisors. If you want to see how my team and I measure up as financial advisors, check out our Yelp reviews at hillaryhendershot.com/Yelp. All right, let's get back to the show.
And so is there a structure or methodology to your coaching? Does it look like talk therapy? What are you doing with women that's unique to this kind of coaching?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I teach something called the model, the self-coaching model. Different people call it different things, but it's basically a very elegant but simple 5-line system that teaches you that it's not the things that happen in your life that cause your emotional experience of life. It's the way you think about what happens to you, right? So the way you think creates how you feel, and the way you feel determines how you behave, and how you behave is what creates any particular result in an area of life. So everything that I teach is through that lens.
Okay.
Which is, here's why I've created, for instance, the amount of money that I've created. Here's why I've saved the amount of money that I've saved, right? What are the beliefs that I have about money that have created the feelings that I have about money that have driven my money behaviors? And we go through all the areas of life that widows usually struggle with and apply that tool.
I think the thing for me, and you don't know this about me, but my 2-year-old daughter was diagnosed with leukemia.
Mm.
And I got to that emotional place where I was imagining being the mother of a dead baby. I mean, literally, my concluding thought was, I don't know how I would ever get okay with that life. I don't know how to live that life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like so much out of my control, you know, I've had struggles in my life, but never something that traumatic, never something that would never go away. Like I imagine every day waking up and having to go through the whole memory process of it, right? I'm not exactly sure. I know I'm not articulating a question clearly right now. I guess I'm just wondering if there's, you're surrounded by widows, these women who have had that same kind of out of control loss. Like, I didn't choose this. I didn't want it. This isn't the life I planned. I would have done things differently if I had known, maybe like regret, probably self-blaming. And so is this just an amped up version of the kinds of traumas most of us have been through? In other words, is what you're saying that it's still surmountable? And I'm wondering, it, there must be that spiritual connection that comes into play. It must be. Because I just couldn't fathom it. So I've talked a lot. What would you say to that?
Yeah, no, that was so good. It's almost like you're in my group. Like you're just kind of like, and imagine. Yeah, but it really is that there are things that happen to us in life that we can't control. And then there's how we choose to respond. And that's oversimplifying it, but really that's it at its core. It's just deciding, okay, when this happens, who am I going to be?
Yeah.
Right? And guiding people through that process, not because I know any better about who they're going to be or what they want in their life. They are the ultimate authority, but because I can see what gets in their way of them living the life that they want and being who they want to be.
Yeah.
The guilt and the regret and the shame and the resistance and all of it.
Yeah, I can hear that. It's like choosing to be someone you didn't know you could know how to be.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how long do you work with folks structurally, logistically? What does your coaching look like? Or is it unique to each client?
No. Well, yes and no. It's the core program that I run is a 6-month program. And so my goal is that by the end of 6 months, you know, we've gotten through what they came to work on and I've given them the tools that they need to be able to manage their emotions and manage their mind and self-coach, and they're well poised to be successful after the 6 months. But what I find is that a lot of women just fall in love with the community and they fall in love with coaching and they end up staying. So I have a continuation program after the 6 months, and I've got some women who are, they've been with me for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I don't see any signs that they're leaving, but it's not from a needy, you know, graspy place. It's because they just love the community and they love having someone support them and help them, and they love the continued growth. So 6 months is the minimum, but I don't typically kick anyone out after that.
Okay. Okay. And it's a mastermind type format. In other words, it's group facilitated discussion.
It's group coaching, less facilitated discussion, but group coaching. So you know, it's kind of Brady Bunch style. I coach one person at a time while everyone else watches.
Okay.
And figures out how can I take the coaching that that person is getting and apply it to my life? Where in my life am I doing the exact same thing that this other person is doing, even though the circumstances are different?
Right.
I find it's very easy, in fact, easier to absorb the coaching when you're watching someone else get coached, because your brain is not resisting the coaching. It's really easy to see the problem and the solution in someone else's life and then find where you're doing the same thing. So often I'll coach someone and then the very next person will say, actually,
you answered my question.
What you just coached her on was, I didn't even know that's what I needed help with, but that's what I needed. Thank you.
Right. You mentioned the word spirituality. Do you want to say anything about your own spiritual development as a result of this? I'm not sure if there's anything fully articulated that you would say about that.
Yeah. I mean, I never really, some people have quite the, you know, spiritual crisis after a loss of this magnitude. And for me, I just never did. I was never really angry about, or angry with, you know, my perception of God, at all. I'm just kind of the belief that I don't have to understand exactly why things happen. I don't have to believe, you know, things are always happening according to some divine plan.
Right. Or that there would always be good outcomes.
Or that there would always be good outcomes. Yeah, any of that. But this, just that my job is just to show up as the best version of myself and you know, love people as, and myself as best I can. And sometimes bad things just happen. We don't have to know why.
Yes, sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Yeah.
So you haven't said specifically, but you have inferred that you have a life now that you can get excited about. That was in your bio. Tell me a little bit about that. What are you excited about now?
Well, for one, I just love what I do, right? I didn't hate what I did before, but my heart really wasn't in it, right? It was just a job that, you know, I live in Wichita, Kansas, and, you know, some would call us the air capital of the world. We build a lot of planes here. And so a lot of people work in aviation. It's just kind of what you do here. And so that's just where I ended up. It's just what I was doing. Hugo had a passion for planes. He loved them. He loved aerospace. It was really his thing. So he had a different work experience than what I was having. For me, it was just a nice, comfy job that paid the bills. And I liked the people, but my heart wasn't there. And so my heart is fully in what I do now. It doesn't feel like work to me. I was talking to my partner earlier that over lunch and just saying, I cannot believe I get paid this well to do something that I absolutely adore. I just genuinely love it. And it has afforded me a lifestyle that's so much better than the one that I had before, right? Like I'm so much more independent financially. I've gotten out of the time for money equation, the you know, security comes from a company idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I create that for myself. The income potential is unlimited and it's intensely rewarding.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So if there's a widow or a friend of a widow listening, what message would you have for that person? What would you want that person to know?
Yeah. Show yourself some grace. You're not going to say all the right things. And you don't have to do it perfectly, right? Just show up for that person and love them. I've done a couple of podcast episodes on those kinds of subjects to help people who are trying to support others through grief. So I would recommend, you know, yep. One is called For Those Who Love Us. Yeah. And so that would be a good podcast for people to listen to if they're trying to support someone who's grieving. And it's okay to still invite them to things. Even though you might be worried that they're going to feel left out or they're going to say no, just keep being you, right? Just keep extending the invitation. And, you know, it's okay if they say no, but probably they're going to come around.
You don't have to get weird.
You don't have to make it weird. One of the best things someone did for me is one of my coworkers just offered to take me to the bookstore. She's like, you just want to go to the bookstore and we'll just go grab coffee and look at books. It was just like shopping, parallel shopping. We weren't even having that big of a conversation, but it was just something normal to get me out of the house and be with people.
And so your podcast is the Widowed Mom Podcast. And
original, right?
Well... Hey, it's best to communicate clearly what you're talking about.
Right? I'm very clear. You like cannot
nobody
miss
has
me.
To say, what is that about?
Right.
And then we need to link to your coaching program. Is that coachingwithkrista.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We'll put that in the show notes. Is there anything we missed or I didn't ask about today?
You know, I could talk about money for days, but if you're in the place where, you know, I said, plan in advance. But if you're in that place where you didn't plan or you're having a lot of money discomfort, whether it's because you have more money than you thought you were going to have or less money than you thought you were going to have, I would just like to normalize all of the emotion and the worry and fear and guilt and shame and embarrassment, all of that stuff that comes up around about money that makes it hard to talk about, and encourage women to have the conversations that they feel uncomfortable with. Because there's nothing wrong with you if you're scared about money, right? Or if you're embarrassed of the money that you have or worried about what other people might think about maybe life insurance money that you got.
Right.
And I find that a lot of people want to hide that. They don't want to talk about it. And so it's very liberating when they actually allow themselves to have conversations about what's really going on in their mind and in their heart as it relates to financial matters. And it's important to be able to do that.
Well, you know, I specialize in working with women. I guess even sounds weird, but I have sections on my website and my blog about widows and money. And I've had widows get almost assaulted with financial advice by people in their life. And I have had widows treat me in ways, it was just very clear that there was a high degree of mistrust, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that has nothing to do with me. That has to do with the space they're sort of thrust into.
Right.
And it's been sad for me because I thought, you know, I'm set up to really serve you, to work well with you. And I've had some really weird conversations. People pick the strangest things to make them suspicious, right? And I've posted things like, it's okay to decline financial advice you didn't ask for or pay for. I don't know if you had people showing up in your life, popping up unrequested and offering you, telling you what to do with your money. Probably women in your group have that.
I think yes. And also sometimes though, they just don't ask for the support that they could use because they're so fearful that they'll do it wrong or mess it up or make the wrong decision. Or they have such guilt and shame about how the money came to them and they don't want it. There's a part of them, it's like they want it, but they also want to reject it at the same time. And so they will ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist or hide it from other people and then not get the confidence around their finances that really is, you know, available to them.
Right. Yeah. There are many grief experts recommend a decision-free zone. So not doing anything with the money for, I think the time period I've heard most often is a year.
Which is really hard to do.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you can decide not to sell your house necessarily, but oftentimes you're being told conflicting information, don't make decisions, but OPS, we really need you to make this decision.
Right?
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard either way. And it's hard to be in charge of your life and the kids and your career and the money.
Yeah.
And your own grief. It's a lot.
Yeah. So true. Yeah.
So thank you. So you said you can talk forever about money. Anything I didn't ask that you feel is a core message that you give to the folks you coach that you didn't already say? You've said a lot.
I know, like, we're like, how long do we want to go? So, one of the core things that I teach about money is that it's neutral. It doesn't cause your feelings. It doesn't create your security. There is no amount of money that will ever make you feel safe. There is no amount of money that will ever make you feel confident. Because it's really the story that you tell yourself about money and what it means to you.
Yeah.
And so you're in charge with your relationship with money based on what you choose.
Yeah.
And I think most of us aren't questioning our relationships with money. We don't know that our relationship with money is optional. We don't know that we can change it if we don't like it. And so we don't put ourselves in that empowered place. And we just keep recreating more of the same.
Well, and I think I hear what you're saying is the same thing you said about being someone who has this circumstance in your life, is that you get to choose who you be about it. And the message is the same.
Yeah.
Money, that ultimately you inherited a relationship to money. You inherited a tragic situation, but you don't have to inherit a negative relationship to the money.
Yes. 100%. Very well said.
Very good. Well, thanks for helping me round that out. I appreciate it. We'll link to all the things. We appreciate you taking the time to be on Profit Boss Radio.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it.
As we wrap things up here for today, I need to review with you the things I have to disclose as a fiduciary financial advisor offering wealth management services through my firm, Hendershot Wealth Management, LLC. You should know that the opinions I express on Profit Boss Radio are my own, and they can change. The content I provide in the show is for general education. It's not intended as specific investment advice, nor do I recommend any specific financial products. Unlike how I roll at home with my husband, I can't guarantee that my statements, opinions, or forecasts are always 100% right. Of course, I wish I could peek into that proverbial crystal ball, but so far, I haven't found it. Past performance is not indicative of future results. I talk a lot about indexes, and I want you to know you can't actually buy an index because, of course, when you take a list of companies and create a product that allows people to invest in those companies, there are fees and expenses involved that reduce returns. Remember, all investing involves risk, which, as you know, means you could lose your money. And I have to tell you that there is no guarantee that any investment plan or strategy will be successful. And that should keep my lawyers happy. Have a great day.